Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Conti's Law. I'm your host, Attorney Michelle Conti, your legal concierge focusing on estate planning, elder law, and estate administration. So it's funny, recently I was asked a question by a prospective client about what happens when mom or dad decide or contemplating the idea of disinheriting a child. Well, in the movies, when we see a scene that somebody passed away and the attorney calls a family meeting and everybody is sitting around and this grandiose image of the attorney reading the last will and testament, only for this to be fiction. I don't know what other way to put it, except for that I've never had that happen. Sure, we can go over and read the will, but 9 times out of 10, a beneficiary will be informed that they are, in fact, a beneficiary of somebody's will, either through an email or through a mailing after the executor has been sworn in with the court. So you'll receive this notice of beneficial interest. But regardless of how you find out, of course, there's always drama when a party learns that they're no longer an automatic part of a parent's will, let's say. Now, it depends on your relationship to the decedent. Here in Pennsylvania, we cannot disinherit a spouse. So more often than not, if a spouse is disinherited, don't get me wrong, you can definitely write it in, but the spouse can always file for their elective share. And that means that they have to get something. What that something is will, of course, be determined by the court, but they must get at least their third. What about kids? So there's nothing in the law stating that a child must receive or must inherit. Typically what happens is a parent will say, look, I don't want Johnny to get anything. And it could be for a myriad of reasons. I've had clients tell me they don't agree with Johnny's personal life, with perhaps he left their religion, perhaps he's in a relationship with somebody they don't agree with. Perhaps he's living a life in general they don't believe in. It could be for any reason. It could be they don't like him anymore. And people laugh when we have this conversation at my office, but the truth of the matter is more people than you would expect disinherit or only name a loved one in their will to tell them they're not getting anything. Usually there's no explanation at all. Usually I've had people say they know the reason why. But the loved one, the kid in this instance, is left with so many unanswered questions. The disinheritance itself in the will is the decedent's final message. And there's no opportunity for that kid who's disinherited to respond or plead or make peace with it. And more often than not, I'm asked the questions. So these questions linger as to what caused the exclusion, especially when somebody insists on putting in there for reasons known to them. And I don't know if you remember, it was a long time ago, but there was a famous actress who disinherited her children, and that's exactly what she put in her will, for reasons known to them. So when they asked me that question, I don't have an answer. They never disclosed that information to me. So I'm a real advocate of, if that's the case, have the conversation prior to death. If you can't have the conversation prior to death, then put it in the document. Now, the legal document typically is just that, the legal document, stating who gets what, when, why, all of that. Most people don't include in their will the lovey-dovey, the feely stuff, if you will. And that's because in the past, there was no place for it. More and more, I know, at least locally, there's up in the North Hills, there's a group of advisors, actually, who are trying to get attorneys to make the legal documents more informational to the beneficiaries. So becoming more emotional. And that's rare. That's an oddity. That's not normally how the will reads. But if that's what you want to include and you want to put in there, look, Johnny, I'm disinheriting you because you can do that. I've had people state that they were disinheriting a child and then they write a letter and the letter is sealed in an envelope and then that envelope accompanies the will. And upon their death, the executor is able to give that letter of explanation to Johnny. I have no better advice than that. It really comes down to whatever that decedent, whoever my client is, who I'm writing that will for, what they feel comfortable with. But I will say this, I have seen the other side of it. It makes that familial relationship very complicated. I'm often quoted saying, I see the worst in people when money and death are involved. The same holds true when you disinherit somebody. Quite often, when that decision is made and that person finally passes away, when Johnny finds out that they're not taking, that they're not to receive anything, he's not to receive anything, based on his mom or dad, whoever's wishes, it often causes a lot of issues amongst the family. And I have one right now where mom had 8 children, 7 of which were left something, 1/7 each of her residue in her will, and she disinherited one of the boys. Nobody knows why. And I didn't draft the will, but the will said something along the lines of, he knows the reasons why. And so when I sat with the family, they were very, very much all in agreement that no matter what they received, they were going to share it with the disinherited brother. And that's all fine and good. But I had to explain to them that they must honor the wishes of their mother. And so if she's disinheriting Mike, then when those checks are written from the estate, Mike doesn't get anything. But those other children can take it upon themselves to then gift Mike a piece of their individual share. And that is what, in fact, they're going to do. But mom didn't leave a reason. If Mike knows the reason, he's not saying. But everybody was fairly shocked when they read the will. And so they came to me asking, can we get rid of this clause in her will? Now, mom was already dead. And the answer is no. Those were her wishes. Let's, before we move on and talk about a case that's very close to my heart, especially with 2019 standards. I often forget to give you our contact information. Conti Law, we're located in Moon Township. Our telephone number is 724-784-0239. And you can always check us out on the web, contilawpgh.com. And I'll repeat our contact information several times throughout the show. But if what we're talking about today hits home or you have questions or concerns, feel free, give us a call. We offer complimentary consultations, 724-784-0239. And again, that's Conti, C-O-N-T-I, Law, L-A-W, PGH.com. So I want to talk to you about, and I know that I've mentioned this in prior shows, What happens if somebody's not married and they die without a will? If you recall in Pennsylvania, if you die without a will, Pennsylvania's intestacy laws take effect. And that's a fancy way to say Pennsylvania will dictate who gets your stuff and who's in charge of administering your estate. But keep in mind that our law assumes in that intestacy clause that your wish is to leave your stuff, your estate, to your family. And in our law books, when we were learning this, your family would be referred to the natural object of your bounty, your blood. Keep in mind, this is all based on public policy, and public policy is very much against disinheriting. That's why we have the legal mechanisms so that you cannot disinherit a spouse here in Pennsylvania. The surviving spouse can execute an election against the decedent's estate, and in that instance, receive his or her statutory share of the assets, even though in the will, he or she was disinherited. So I tell people often, you can put what you want in your will, but you legally cannot disinherit a spouse. So the will is meant to be our final directive as to the distribution of your stuff, who gets it, when they get it, who's in charge. But what happens in the instance you don't have a will and you're not married? You have a longtime partner. So my current client, and I know I've given this example in the past before, have been, and I hate to use the term boyfriend, girlfriend, but it is what it is. They've been boyfriend and girlfriend. They've been in a relationship living together for over 40 years. When the woman died, she assumed, and this is coming from the lips of her siblings, she assumed because she'd been with her boyfriend for so many years, they lived together for 40 years, they cohabitated, that her stuff would now become his. And that is very much not the case. So in settling her estate, her boyfriend, not her husband, keep in mind they weren't married and they were never, they didn't fall under the rules. They're not grandfathered in to being married. We don't have common law marriage anymore, but so long as you meet the criteria, you may be grandfathered in. In their case, they did not. And so under Pennsylvania intestacy law, her assets would have gone to her next of kin. They will go to her next of kin. Keep in mind, it's not her boyfriend. Her parents are deceased. She was never married. She didn't have any children. Next in line are her siblings. She has three of them. Two out of the three of the siblings really like her partner. One of them doesn't. Two out of the three of the siblings have agreed that the boyfriend deserves the stuff. They know that was their sister's intention, but one of them doesn't care. And under the law, he's entitled to one third. Well, in this case, we're trying to get it to the boyfriend because it's the house. They live there. They live there 40 years. And that's the problem. That's the issue we run into. Only if she had written a will, a basic will would have done. Whatever her intentions were, jot it down on a piece of paper. State who you want to act is the administrator of the executor, somebody who's going to be in charge. Because otherwise, something very similar to what I just explained could happen, and it happens all the time. As do will contests. People ask me if it's as bad as they've heard, if people actually will fight once somebody dies in court. And the answer is absolutely yes. And when there's a will contest, and when the court finalizes their decision, keep in mind the will is supposed to be the decedent's final farewell as to their distributions, what their wishes are. But once that settlement is reached, it ultimately changes the intentions of the decedent. So I tell people, when you are considering disinheriting somebody, think about not only the financial, but the emotional repercussions, the ramifications. The exclusion will often not only just affect the person you're disinheriting, but all of the beneficiaries. And most of the time, they're siblings, because they're left to fight one another, as well as whoever is in charge of the estate. Again, typically one of your kids. But now you're putting that burden of trying to explain why you did what you did, even rightfully so, but you're putting that burden on the administrator, on your executor's shoulders, to try and justify or explain why mom decided to leave Johnny out. When in truth, nobody really knows that but mom. So these are some of the things that you really should consider. I'm not saying don't disinherit somebody, but make sure you address it the right way. Because when they find out, more often than not, you'll already be gone. And so those unanswered questions will linger. And you don't want your family being broken apart, ripped apart, trying to establish a cause. Now, these are just things we see, and we see them all the time. And when I sit with clients and we share our stories, they'll say, oh, I heard you state, I see the worst in people when death and money are involved. And it's the truth. It's not even my clients who have the, you know, millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars. It's usually us normal people fighting over the $50,000 estate. If this rings true to you, or if you have questions or concerns, you want to make sure your estate plan is up to date, give us a call at 724-784-0239 or check out our website at contilawpgh.com. Now, I know that I've also mentioned in the past a case I'm working on where the parents knew prior to passing that the siblings did not get along. And so what they did was they chose not the oldest, not the youngest, who they thought the most responsible was. And that's logical. But the most responsible and the one who was most likely to cause problems, at least I'm told, loathe one another. For whatever reason, they don't get along. They never have since they were little. And I believe they may be 10 years apart. But that's neither here nor there. They just have never gotten along. And it has to do with one of the children's unresolved issues, questioning how much her parents actually loved her. Now, keep in mind, these people who are now the kids who are administrating the mom's estate are in their 60s. So they're not 20, 30-year-old kids anymore bickering back and forth. These are grown women who don't like one another. But mom and dad knew that, and their wills mirrored one another, so they were identical. And let's call her Susie. Susie was in charge of administering the estate to to pay out everything, all the debt, and there really wasn't any, but to make the distributions to the kids. It has become the one child's, and I truly believe this, goal in life to make Susie's life as miserable as possible. And again, this isn't over a $10 million estate. And I hear this quite often, where I had a young lady tell me that she knows she was the beneficiary of an estate, and her share may have been less than $10,000. And that whoever the, now this wasn't my case, but whoever the administrator or executor was of the estate mishandled, misappropriated. I'm not sure if it was intentional, but we all hear these stories. Did something that they probably shouldn't have with the money. And again, it wasn't a lot. She said to me, very, very wise woman in her late 20s, she said to me, why would I break up the family that I have left over $8,000? Is it worth it? And I think that we can all learn from her, because a lot of people wouldn't look at the number. They would look at, well, I'm doing this to teach someone a lesson. I'm doing this because this is what's right. And maybe so, but she was smart enough to see that this really could disrupt the familial relationship that she would have, that her kids would have for the rest of their lives. And she said to me, look, it's just not worth it. And of course, the lawyer in me is saying, well, you can do this and this and this. And she said, yeah, I could, but I'll never speak to them again. I pause because that's really something we can all listen to and learn from. Very, very smart girl. Now, we're nearing the end, and I know that I tell a lot of horror stories, but I will say this, and I think one of our next upcoming shows will be about this, but I have clients who are very much into controlling stuff from the grave, controlling distributions, controlling when the beneficiary gets it, why they would get it, more so than just any health or maintenance support matters, education. And I had a client that I tried to discuss this with, who had three kids. Now, they're not deceased yet, so I don't know what's going to happen down the road, but they have three children. One of them is financially responsible and secure in her life. And so they named her as the executor, as well as the trustee of the remainder trust that they're creating for their other two children. And apparently the other two have had a bad history with money management in the past. And that's common. I see this quite a bit, where they say, well, we just want to make sure they don't blow it. The issue is going to become, at least what I think, is that the daughter who they have in charge may become overwhelmed acting as the trustee of her siblings' trusts. And I say it really depends on whether it makes sense to name a corporate trustee. And again, that's another show all unto itself, but you really need to think about who you're appointing and what position and what that job, that role consists of, what the responsibility is that they have. Is it fair to drop that all on their shoulders? Especially if there's going to be resentment from the other two siblings for not having their monies distributed outright, but to be held in trust. Have you had that conversation with them, saying, look, Becky, we don't think you're mature enough to manage your money. We don't want you to blow it. You have a bad history of spending. But if you don't have that conversation, and it's a hard conversation to have, if you don't have it, then you're leaving that burden on the other child's shoulder to try to explain and justify your reasoning. We see it all the time. Just something to be cognizant of when you're putting your plan in place. I'm not saying don't leave it in a remainder trust. That's how I did it for my kids. But have the conversation or draft a letter with your reasonings. Why? So it doesn't fall on your child's shoulders. That's the end of our show today. Thank you for tuning in. As always, we'll be here next week. Have a great weekend. If you need to get in touch with us, our number is 724-784-0239. And our website is contilawpgh.com. Thank you and have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.